Hi, I'm an Air Force veteran from Eglin Air Force Base. In 1991, I did a software audit at AT&T. We were hired to look for illegal computer software. I traced the source code to banks on four continents and to the space shuttle facility located in Mount Remora in South America on the border of Venezuela and French Guiana, where they have a shuttle facility in a 9,096-foot-high mountain range. Where they were launching anywhere from four to six space shuttles that were conducting electronic warfare against civilizations out there. And finally, I traced the source code to a bank in Zurich, Switzerland called Signet Bank, which was 200 stories high, and to a corporation known as Zeus Corporation, which was a planet-building corporation. Anyway, just to let you know, there was an electronic technology that was over 1,000 years old called Thetian technology, and I'm a Thetian technologist. And there was also something called radio crystallography, which was a microelectronic technology. It went from C-100 to over 6,000 receptives. And there was something known as a biomaterial manned magnetic flight facility, which was microelectronic technology. Electronic warfare was conducted against my family by Zeus Corporation and Hera Corporation. They were considered part of a mafia called Gods in Art in Heaven, and they were involved with SMI Corporation. And in 91, electronic warfare was conducted against my family, and I was an honorable Air Force veteran. Not only that, they tried to also ruin my character because of my sexual preference, because I was bisex-oriented, and they were just a bunch of whores from outer space living in a city in outer space. But if you rent the movie is called Blade Runner. The movie's called Blade Runner. It shows a city called Olympia, where the Gods in Art in Heaven played with their levitating aircraft. And it shows the city in outer space on a planet. The planet was out by Jupiter, which is a blue water ocean world out by Jupiter. They called it, some of them called it Thalesa or Tiarna. But I've tagged all the electronic systems on the Hera weapons system out there. They've all been tagged. Every one of them's been tagged. And here's one for you. Nuclear bomb families have been around forever, and God's been around forever, because in 91 they said there was Lucifer the devil. They said Lucifer the devil's mafia, and it was a supercomputer. It was a mainframe computer out on something known as the Methuselah Space Station or Methuselah City in outer space, and it was known as Lucifer the devil, and I was told it was a weapons systems computer, and the CIA had paid people $55,000 a week to go out, and some congressmen, they were paying a lot of money to ship dope and whores in outer space. But from the gods of outer space, from the civilizations in the center of the galaxy, somebody told me there was a God statement here in Orlando, Florida in 91, and I put retribution against the Hera weapon system, which was Zeus's family, a planet-building family. And so, like I said, God's been around forever. Plutonium Mafia.
Hello and welcome to the Morning Report, with your host Kevin and Sko K-E-3-V-I-N, Episode 6 of the Morning Report. Kevin Short Bits. Kevin talks about some various topics. Next week he will be covering the FX show in Orlando. But first, some comments from listeners of the Morning Report.
Have you checked your email this morning, Mulder?
No, why?
Because I received something unsettling and I wondered if you've gotten it too.
What is it?
Hi, Kevin. This is John Mason in Austin. Just got through listening to, I think it was episode 4 about the trains. I've known you for years. I know you've been doing train watching, and quite frankly, when I heard about it, I thought, oh boy, you know, maybe after that I can go watch some paint dry. I just didn't really see the what you saw in it. But after the podcast, it actually sounds pretty interesting. There's a lot more to it than I thought. Unfortunately, I think the predominant rail line through Austin is Norfolk Southern, and according to your podcast, they use the in-cab signals versus radio, so that's probably why I don't hear a whole lot on the rail frequencies. There is a smaller line, the Longhorn Railroad, kind of near where I live and work, and I usually only hear them when they're blocking McNeil Road with their train. So that's about the extent of my rail monitoring. But anyway, great podcast, and maybe if I'm ever in Orlando again, we'll go watch some trains go by.
Well, I kinda agree with most of your points reference the POM. By the way, I still have my POM tungsten. But I believe POM cut their own throat, they didn't had anything new. Also, the iPhone does most of the stuff that you want, like the calendar, notes, etc. iTunes just sync the iPhone with Mail, iCall, iWeb and others applications on OSX Albert Pratt's Mount Plymouth, Florida.
Good morning, Kevin. This is John in Austin. I just finished listening to Episode 5 about personal digital assistants. First of all, I agree with you in that companies such as Palm are not giving us what we want, and they aren't being very innovative. My initial thought on this was that they have to keep the products dumbed down for the masses. The only problem is I no longer see the masses even using PDAs. A lot of this technology is rolled in the smartphones, but aside from talking and texting, I don't see these PDA functions being used. Here are my thoughts about why PDAs have gone the way if they track tape with the general public. They're just my thoughts and observations. I could be off in left field. I don't know. But I moved out to Austin and started working here 10 years ago. Both at work and around town, I saw seemingly everyone tapping away at their, quote, Palm Pilots. I was young and foolish at the time, so I went out and bought a PDA, but I settled on a WINCE, you know, Windows CE device, because I thought it looked better than the Palm. Remember, this was the dot-com era. People had money to burn, and employers were pushing personal productivity. If you're not already organized and productive, a PDA isn't going to do it for you. My analogy is this. While I'm good at repairing cars, plumbing, doing electrical work, I'm just horrible at woodworking. I could go out and buy the best power saw on the market, but I still wouldn't be able to cut molding because I'm no good at woodworking. I just don't have that skill. If you're an organizational nightmare, a PDA isn't going to do much for you. People toss money at the problem, you know, lack of organization, bought an expensive gadget, and it didn't work. So they tossed it in their junk drawer. Those of us who did have organizational skills who were similarly disappointed with their PDAs, I spent a little under $400 for mine. It had 2 megabytes of storage. My email alone filled the thing. To make matters worse, I couldn't read, Word, or Excel on it. I ended up giving it to my sister, who I think threw it away after about a month. I'm a decade wiser now, and I'm a follower of David Allen's Getting Things Done philosophy. Using the GTD mindset, I went looking for a PDA that would fit all of my needs and discovered it doesn't exist. I've ended up ordering a Nokia N810. I expect it late next week. By the time this podcast airs, I might have it. I'll dial in and give you a review of it.
Good morning. This is the Morning Report with Kevin Insko. I'm not sure which episode this is going to end up in, but I carry my recorder with me. At all times, and this, I was listening to Adam Curry on No Agenda podcast, and they started at the very end, started talking about Facebook and security, and that triggered something I've wanted to talk about for a while, so I whipped my recorder out, I'm going to do my little piece on this, and I don't know which episode it's going to end up in. I'm going to be going to FX here in a couple weeks. That was what I intended to be my next episode, but I don't know, maybe I'll crank one out before then. Anyway, okay, let me talk about Facebook, and really my rant is, actually it's not a rant, but my focus is not so much on the social aspect of sites. Well, maybe it is actually, but here's what I see in Facebook that I think is cool. I really, by the way, detest this whole so-and-so has thrown something at you in the super pope crap. It bores the snot out of me. So-and-so threw a vampire at you, whatever. It's probably fun for college kids, but I just find it boring, but whatever. It keeps interest alive, so I tolerate it. But anyway, What I think is cool about social bookmarking sites or Facebook is there's a very, very much a need to have a central place to put your contact information. Now, I'm a champion of LinkedIn.com, and I'm on there, and if I know you, I will be glad to link to you, but I think this is a very cool site, and I use this for this purpose. I keep my contact information up to date in LinkedIn, some private phone numbers that aren't on the internet, address information, although there's quite a bit about me on the internet that's easily searchable. Had I to do it over again, I probably wouldn't be quite so open. I think openness is my middle name because I'm pretty transparent, I think, at least internet-wise. But I think what's cool about Facebook is that I could also do that. You know, here's the thing. You know, I'm on MySpace, which I detest. I hate that site. But I've got some family. I've got some friends who love it, or they stay on there for whatever reason. And I stay on there for that purpose. And I'm on that. I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm now on something called Connects, which is some other friend put me on. There's Spock, which I've recently signed up on. There's all these social sites. I wish we could standardize on one site. Looks like Facebook or LinkedIn would be the two main sites that we could agree on. But the thing is that these sites tickle different fancies, and people go to them for different reasons, and they have slightly different purposes. Like, I see Connect seems to be a B2B, you know, business people looking for other business people for something, you know, some kind of inter-business relationship. LinkedIn's kind of that way, but it's also a personal connection software. It tends to be business. I mean, they throw where you work the very top of the list. You know, Facebook doesn't really... Facebook is group-oriented as opposed to where LinkedIn is business-oriented. Although there are groups in LinkedIn, they're really not as large an emphasis as it is in Facebook. But I don't know. Here's the thing. You know, I publish on my site for 10 years now. My phone number, the public one. I have a bunch of different phone numbers. Well, I shouldn't say a bunch, but I have a number of phone numbers that mostly are private, but there's some that are public, and they're usually go straight to voicemail. Believe me, you're not waking me up in the middle of the night. They're going to dump in a voicemail. I'm not going to give you that privilege. But I like to be contactable. I like to be available. And I've always joked, if you can't find me on the internet, your Google's broke. Your internet connection's broke. I'm extremely easy to find. But, so now here comes this LinkedIn, this Facebook. So I start putting my, I figure that's my hub now. And I put my contact information on there. Because the whole thing about Facebook and LinkedIn is you supposedly know these people, and you have some level of trust. I've mentioned before, not in a podcast, but I run various lists, cfgeeks.org, there's a CF Geeks mailing list, and I've posted about this a number of times, that there's basically four trust levels. There's starting backwards, number four would be I just met you. Number three would be casual friends, maybe people you work with, you see infrequently. Then number two would be your inner circle. These are friends you deal with often, maybe on the internet, maybe in person. You interact with them, you're on mailing lists with each other. That would be level two. And then, of course, level one is intimate friends. And that's the cream of the crop, where you, you know, tend to communicate your deepest thoughts and most private thinking and so forth. So Facebook kind of connects your number fours and your number threes, but I don't know that I would use it for number two or number one. No such site exists that I know of for number two. Actually, I'm thinking of creating one. I'm not going to tell you the name. Unfortunately, I lack Oompa Loompas who can code in PHP and not Ruby. Somebody's trying to talk me into using Ruby. It's a lot of performance problems I've seen with Ruby. So I have all these wonderful ideas for websites, but I lack the time and coding staff to bring them up. But anyway, this wasn't about promoting that. It just came to my mind. But this podcast is about seeing gaps in current offerings. So Facebook, you know, it's brought up, you know, you shouldn't put your real information in Facebook. There's security issues. So why is that? What's the security risk? Since theoretically, you only link people you know or have what I call that number three or number four trust level. Well, the argument was that, you know, you don't know what the people of Facebook are doing. They've already admitted. In fact, some people at Google, I think, too, have admitted they read the email. Which is, by the way, one of my often rants about storing your email on another server. Now, this gets into hyper-conspiracy theory, but if you really, really want to be private, you encrypt your email if you're using a public email site like Google or your ISP storing your email for you. In my case, I run my own servers with SSL, TLS. Email theoretically gets encrypted in and out to me. I download through SSL IMAP, through Dovecot, and so it's all encrypted from my server down to me anyway, by default. But of course, there's no controlling how the email gets into the system to start with, so I always recommend you encrypt your email when you have private communications. Google Mail has, there's some plugins in Firefox that will allow you to decrypt your Google Mail. But originally I was very anti-Google Mail for the security aspects. I figured they were reading my personal email and indexing it and building a knowledge database about me, and very much not liking that. But I've since sort of come to the realization that I'm not that interesting and not worthy of building knowledge management around. And B, I just simply encrypt the stuff I don't want them to see. And I found the Google Mail to be a very solid, very fast, that's a key word there. I mean, I have my own server. I do use Squirrel Mail for my webmail. I can get to my IMAP. Right now I use Thunderbird at home is the final resting place for my email, which then gets archived to DVD later. But in the intermediate, I don't carry Thunderbird with me everywhere. And I'm actually thinking about just dropping the whole Thunderbird thing altogether, by the way. Thinking about just IMAPing it on the Linux server, dropping it to folders, and just burning it to DVD when it gets to be so much, and be done with it. And I can, you know, eventually I'll have nice large RAIDs. Right now I've got, you know, my MP3s and my video collections and things that are taking up too much space. I don't want to put all my email out there. But my goal is eventually to have a searchable email archive. But anyway, Google Mail does that for me rather nicely for now. And so I'm using it. And, of course, remembering to encrypt private communications and equipping everybody else to do that as well, because the whole thing with encryption is both of you have to be able to do that. So anyway, back onto the topic of Facebook. So then the argument is, well, the people of Facebook can read your contact information. Well, yes, I guess. I mean, somebody somewhere is an administrator of a web server, or an email server. If your personal data is flying around in packets anywhere on the internet, someone's an administrator of that packet at any given moment. Someone owns the router, someone owns the switch it's on, someone's administrating the web server, the email queue that you got put into temporarily. I mean, sure, there's an illusion of privacy in anything to do with the internet. So what are you going to do? I mean, the old alternative, you know, if you listen to my episode 5, I think it was, where I was ranting about PDAs, the old thing was you'd beam your contact book to somebody. Well, how do you know, thanks to Spock and some of these other social contact sites, how do you know that contact information isn't going to get spammed somewhere else, either by virus or some of these guys, they upload their entire address book willy-nilly, blindly into some server to see if you have friends on the service or whatever. Boom, instant spam. And by the way, there's another rant. Who the heck, who is dumb enough to enter their username and password to their Gmail or their Yahoo Mail or, Windows Live, I guess, has an equivalent thing, MSN, whatever it is now, I could care less. Who is dumb enough to actually do that and let the thing import that? I mean, why are you handing over your Gmail password to some Facebook app? Oh, well, another rant. So, it's interesting. What are you going to do? I like the concept of having a central site that trusted level friends can access and find out if, I went to another job, if I moved, if I changed phone numbers. I don't have to go hunt down 1,000 people. I can simply put it on Facebook or LinkedIn.com and poof, automatically those folks have that updated information. So, I've got to make a pit stop here. I'll be back. Another podcast topic. John Dvorak, Tech 5 for, what is it, January 14th. He goes into about laptops. He said this before, but he goes into about laptops are now the standard issue. Well, I'm ahead of that curve. I was laptop only in 1998 and on. Until about, really, last year when I bought my first desktop in ages. Because the processor power, and mainly because my laptop had fallen behind in speed. And I had invested in a new one. But I'm now even beyond that. As I said in another podcast, I'm now looking at web topping, which is basically putting your... Well, for instance, one of the arguments, and I'll insert the clip in here, but one of the arguments is that one of the reasons I used a laptop exclusively was because I traveled a lot, and I wanted the same set of data with me wherever I went. Now, in those days, that meant storing it on the hard drive of the laptop and backing it up, of course, every night, or syncing it was another thing I used to do. I had a dual boot. It would boot Linux or Windows 98, and I would take the Linux partition, boot it up, and back up the Windows 98 partition, the VFAT file system, which is very easy to do. But now my laptop is a Pentium 3 Celery, and it's very old, very ancient now, circa 2000. And I really haven't kept it up to date. It's got like Gen 2 2004, I think, on it. It's pretty old. It's not even worth emerging anymore because it's so slow. I could emerge on the desktop, or I have a work laptop I use, the Dell D620. I could, and I have Gen 2 on that as well, the latest, 2007. And I could cross-compile, I could basically build for the Celery and then copy the files over. But it just isn't worth it anymore. I don't fool with it. I hardly ever break out my personal laptop, only for debugging. And the battery died some years ago. The battery is useless now. I've looked at buying other batteries. They're like $100, and I really probably should if I don't end up getting another laptop. But I have to carry a power cord with me. So basically, my laptop bag, I'm carrying two laptops. This is a topic under itself. I'm carrying two laptops, two power supplies, because the old personal laptop doesn't work off the battery any longer, not even for a second. You have to plug it in. But I'm going off in tangents here. Anyway, the reason I keep the personal laptop around is I have a bunch of debugging tools and Nmap and stuff, which I do on the work one too, but I've got everything set up on the personal laptop the way I like it and I'm used to. So I do use it for troubleshooting, and sometimes I'll take it into the machine room. It's really nice when the battery works. I take it in the machine room and boot up a Sun, connect to its console port back in the days when they were serial, which I still have a bunch of those, and or configure SAN or anything that had a serial port access I could boot into it. At one time I was trying to get BootP and DHCP set up on it so that I could boot install a Solaris 10 or maybe even a Linux system from it. And it just wasn't enough hard drive and wasn't enough horsepower. Wasn't worth the effort. So anyway, fast forward today. So I've got this laptop case. Let me finish that tangent out before I get to the final tangent. But I carry around my scanner, a police scanner, a Pro 97, my Pro 83 receiver, my THF6 Kenwood dual band, my GPS, some adapters. I have all kinds of cable adapters. I have a null modem DB25 to DB9. It's an octopus basically where it has DB9, DB25s on each end, and it's an all modem. I've got null modem adapters. I've got gender benders. I've got all kinds of stuff, a few tools, things I need when I'm on the road and when I'm traveling and I need to do a quick repair or talk to another computer, all kinds of stuff. Plus this personal laptop's in there, the work laptop. It's pretty heavy. In fact, I'm surprised I haven't separated my shoulder yet from carrying around what has to be about 40-50 pounds. I should actually weigh it. I'm not sure what it weighs. If nothing else, my arms must be strong from carrying it. Okay, final tangent. So anyway, his whole point is, I guess I'm a generation ahead of him because I was making that move back in 1998 where I basically used my laptop for everything, personal work, everything, because it was my data set that went with me. Well, fast forward to today, where I've talked about the internet being prevalent. Wireless isn't always prevalent. But it does fit into my, 3.0 thinking of, instead of carrying my data set with me everywhere, why not have my data set internet accessible? And therefore, I have my PDA and my stuff everywhere I want. Everywhere I go, I've got it. So it sort of fits into my using a Nokia N810 or N800, coupled with Bluetooth, coupled with a cell phone, which might end up being an iPhone, I don't know, as my my internet connection. Poof, pretty much wherever I am, I've got internet through the cell phone, and I've got my web top, and I can access stuff, so there you go. So I no longer, he mentions traveling light, with security restrictions. I don't fly anymore. My business hasn't grown to the point where I have to fly all over the country. Should that ever come, I guess I'll have to revisit this, but I dread flying. I often say if I can't drive there, I don't go. It's just a royal pain. I know that I have a fear of flying. I actually used to enjoy flying. I flew quite a bit. I was on a frequent flyer program for Delta all the way up until, late 2000 when I changed jobs and went to work for a local company. I no longer did the traveling, didn't need to. And since then, I haven't been on a plane. Haven't been on a plane since, June 2000. Even, before 9/11. I just haven't had the need, and since 9/11, with all the security and everything, it's just a hassle. I'll get into the security stuff another day. I'm trying not to get political in this podcast. I actually think about starting another podcast where I can get political, but I want to stay very away from politics here, because I'm stay to the technical and the interesting and, family, ear-friendly format. But anyway, so John Dvorak's talking about traveling light, not having to go to the airport with, a bunch of stuff, and that includes a heavy laptop. Well, there you go. That is, one of the other devices I've looked at is the ePC. I'm thinking about replacing my personal laptop, which, does my troubleshooting debugging, with the ePC. The ePC has a keyboard I could use, even though it's tiny. It's kind of like the old, I looked at one time getting those old, what are those small little ultra-mobile PCs? Librettos. The Toshiba Librettos. I looked at getting one of those one time. I think at best it does like Windows 98. Although I think you can put Linux on them. But it had a nice little keyboard, nice little compact design. It was thick. It's probably about 3 inches thick. But it wasn't very wide or very long. Well, it could be like that. So, you know, the Asus EPC is spelled triple E. I could carry that in a travel bag, no problem. And as long as I have my Bluetooth or my internet access, I'm set. So these are things I think about how to simplify. So I'm ahead of John there. John, you're right. A lot of people are moving from desktop to laptop. Probably for different reasons than I did it, but I just, honestly, folks, I hate having configurations on different computers. I really hate that. I customize my desktop. I use KDE. I get everything set just so. I write myself scripts. I write menus. You know, all productivity time savers. And I really hate it when I get onto a foreign desktop that isn't configured the way I like, that doesn't have the software I want, with the preferences I want, configured to do what I want, with my data sets there and my directories. And so Webtop seems to be the solution to that. As I've mentioned before, there's some security implications, but I run the server. Not everybody can claim that. I mean, I actually have my own servers that I have access to that are root protected and encrypted in many cases, so I don't have those worries, but that's 2% of the population can get away with that. So anyway, that's all for that.
You sure this is okay?
Yeah, it's totally cool. Just keep your voice down. My roommates are sleeping.
You mean your parents?
Yeah, same thing.
Nice jammies.
Thanks, they're a present for my roommates.